It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
About things that need to be talked about here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my special guest for the third hour here today is Kathy Kelly. Now, Kathy Kelly is a coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. And I'm the one thing, I got you there, Kathy.
Yes, hello, Ernest.
Hello. What we're going to talk about today are the assassinations done by Predator and Reaper drones. And I want to make sure that the audience understands what we're talking about, because I find this extremely interesting. It's like watching a bad B sci-fi movie. And you knew, I mean, even as a kid, you know, in the 60s, 70s, that if a big bad guy government wanted to make somebody dead by pushing a button, that's exactly what they would do. Now they have the capacity. That's what they're doing. And it's whoever is a perceived enemy to them. Maybe they're not an enemy to me. I don't know. And once you send robots to start doing this kind of stuff, man, you're going down a dark, Terminator path. And I want to make sure that the audience understands what we're talking about. Can you please explain it for us?
Sure. Ernest, I'm out here in Nevada, and this morning very early at 5:30 in the morning, we walked from where we're housed to Creech Air Force Base, and flying in the skies just in the course of a 15 or 20-minute walk were Predators and Reapers. And these are called, in military parlance, UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles. And the Predator or the Reaper have those names, which, you know, connote something kind of grim, because they can be equipped with 500-pound bombs, and each can have two Hellfire missiles as well. But what it doesn't have is a pilot. It's a robot. It's a drone. Now, these ones lifted off from the runway at Creech Air Force Base, but we would want your listeners to understand that in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, the drone aircraft lift off from the base, and until they're airborne, the Air Force personnel in Afghanistan or mercenaries working for the U.S. in Pakistan are completely in charge of the unmanned aerial vehicle, the drone. But once they're airborne, and if the drone is flying over Afghanistan, then it's controlled completely by Air Force personnel in a base like Creech Air Force Base, which is the one nearest to where I'm sitting right now.
In Nevada.
But there are also drones being operated by the Hancock National Guard base in just outside of Syracuse, just outside of Syracuse's Hancock International Airport. And the drones that fly over Pakistan are operated by CIA agents working in Langley Air Force Base at Langley Field. But once a drone is airborne and being operated by U.S. military forces or the CIA, it has, because of a camera that's embedded in it, an ability to feed constant intelligence to General Petraeus, to the Joint Special Operations Forces, to all of the top military, and analysts are supposed to be telling these military people, okay, this is what we think you're seeing. So suppose the drone is feeding surveillance that Scots, people on a mountainside, let's say very near to a place where the Taliban in Afghanistan and the Kunar province had just attacked a police station. Well, maybe the people they're seeing on the mountainside are those very insurgents. And so all of a sudden it becomes important for the military analysts watching the surveillance feed from the drone to scrutinize it very carefully. Who are these people? Are they, quote, bad guys? Are they HVTs, meaning high-value targets? And then it all becomes kind of dicey. Do they pull the joystick, basically, that will release a bomb and kill those possible insurgents, those possible resistance fighters? Well, this happened about 5 days ago. The order was given by the kill chain, yes, fire missiles at those people on that mountainside. And it turned out later that they were six children between the ages of 6 and 12 who were out collecting scrap metal because they wanted to help their parents. That was their job. And they were all killed instantly. They were carbonized. Their body parts couldn't even be collected.
You know, this is happening a lot, especially when there's some kind of social gathering like a wedding or funeral or something, and they think they got a high-value target, HVT, and all of a sudden you find the entire wedding party blown up against the bloody parts against the walls of the backyard or something, and you wonder why we have more terrorists or insurgents or resistance fighters or whatever they want to call them. It just seems to me like they're creating the enemy. It's like it's on purpose. I mean, do you give any credence to that thought?
Well, General McChrystal, before he was basically relieved from his job because he had spoken very sassily about his higher-ups, about the authorities, had himself said at one point, we've shot an amazing number of people, but to my knowledge, none of them ever posed us any threat. So it does then awaken questions. Well, why? Just as you said, why are we creating circumstances wherein it's likely that people will be so angry at the United States that although they may not previously have seen us as the enemy, they now for the rest of their lives will vow revenge? And these kinds of circumstances are regular. It's a grim task, but at Voices for Creative Nonviolence, really, honestly, every morning we kind of assign ourselves the task of going through the news reports from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, and collecting information about civilian victims of U.S. attacks, particularly unarmed civilians. And I just had told you the story about the six youngsters on the mountainside. Another one that created a tremendous stir in Afghanistan happened in the province of Wardak. A young boy had returned to be with his family for the iftar meal, and night raids, special forces on the ground, had gotten some kind of surveillance information that this young boy and his two brothers were Taliban fighters. And so with no questions asked, the U.S. special forces burst into the home on a night raid, and they executed those three boys summarily. And the villagers were in shock. They said, wait a minute, this young guy was a student. And the last one to be executed said, my brothers are not fighters. If you think that there was a gun, show it to me and kill me with it. And then eventually they did execute all three. So these kinds of situations where women and children happen to be cowering, huddling, trying to escape exchanges of what they call engagement, exchanges of fire, and they're killed, or a convoy is going along a road and suddenly it's blasted. This happened recently when some election people were, people who were candidates for election were traveling through one of the northern provinces of Afghanistan where there hasn't been any fighting whatsoever. And all of a sudden, the United States decided that the second vehicle in that convoy might contain high-value targets, and they blew it up. Well, you know, Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai's own officials are saying, we can't cope with this. It's causing so much anger. And repeatedly, President Karzai begs the United States, call off the killing of civilians. And when we kill civilians in Pakistan, Pakistan's government is so afraid of the United States, they don't even ask us to stop killing their civilians. They just
thing that I also am getting a lot of feedback from some of my contacts over to antiwar.com is that there are just people that have a high enough influential position to just give a name and a little bit of information on someone that is a rival lover of something or somebody that threatens them politically or anything that excuse go bomb, take care of this guy in exchange for what. And they do. And it's just based on the most tenuous circumstances or evidence or what. It just doesn't. It's because they can, and they will keep doing this kind of thing until they can't. And when we come back, we'll talk some more with Kathy Kelly on what will it take to make sure that they can't anymore. I don't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe an entire fall of the empire, because Afghanistan is where empires go to die.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
People living like they ain't got no mamas. I think the whole world's addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism. But we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah. Madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurting, and crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
Oh, it's right here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock and Kathy Kelly, coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. That's VCNV.org, VCNV.org. And we're talking about the use of drones in the continuation of the war on, I don't know, children, people generate, whatever. How the heck do we know? It's a drone. So when we had the Bush administration came out, I could see the progression. I started doing radio in February of 2003 before we actually went into Iraq, and I knew what was coming. There would be a Marine that would have his boot up on a pile of rubble with American flag saying, we win, mission accomplished, and then the war would start. And it would be people just like everywhere else. There are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave them alone. And they usually now around the world have an American flag on their sleeve. And now you don't even see the sleeve. All of a sudden, it just your life evaporates. The Hellfire missile comes into your party. So I have to ask, if you could see, Kathy, the progression from the Bush administration saying that, well, they had this Walker kid that was working, wanted to go and help the Taliban. I don't know if he knew the U.S. was coming. So he's over there doing practicing his faith or whatever. They capture him. They don't know what the heck to do with him. He's a U.S. citizen. So they got to go, well, we got to do this enemy combatant thing. We got to strip you of your citizenship so you don't get any kind of habeas corpus. You don't get any type of innocent until proven guilty. You don't get a trial. You don't go. We got to come up with a new status of human beings. And I go, here we go. Because as soon as they start saying you don't have human rights based on your citizenship or something, then you can kiss it goodbye. Now they do it and they say, hey, you're an enemy combatant, and we give the power to assassinate you to the president. This is gets passed on to Obama. Does he do away with it as an abomination to the Constitution or the rule of law or just freaking being smart? No! Heck no! He wraps his arms and legs around it and goes and kills people more with more drones, Reapers, and Predator drones. And I'm going, this has to be laid at the doorstep of the Obama administration. As much as we would blame Bush, they're doing it now. How are you dealing with this?
Well, the institutionalization of assassination is something that I think lowers security for everybody, but particularly when a government says, we now have the right as a policy, without asking any questions or engaging in any due process, to eliminate, eradicate, kill, assassinate by aerial means of, you know, with the UAVs, any person whom we believe to be a threat, including a U.S. citizen whom we believe to be a threat, then in institutionalizing that policy, you actually hold forth assassination as a valid means of conducting foreign policy. Now, I think that any president of the United States, given the history of the United States, where John F. Kennedy was assassinated, where the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, where Malcolm X was assassinated, where there have been
Robert Kennedy,
was assassinated. There have been circumstances where people in high places in the United States have reason to be fearful that they themselves could be eliminated, maybe even by people within their own governance. To institutionalize a policy of assassination, to start to move the United States legally along a path which says that we are no longer bound by the international law that forbids extrajudicial killing, that forbids targeted assassination.
Yeah, see, I'm not even looking there, Nat. You know, I don't need an international law to tell me that's just stupid, okay? And the thing is that we have, not only do we have, the military has this capacity, and think about it. If they had a satellite-based weapon, shoot, X-ray, laser, boom, kind of, would they do it? Heck yeah, they would. And heck, for all we know, they can.
But hang on, Ernest, because I think at one point in our conversation, we touched base with the idea that somebody or some groups of somebodies, maybe even very ordinary people, have got to take responsibility if the authorities and the higher-ups are acting dangerously and recklessly. Then how do the little people, like me, find a way to assert ourselves into the process and say, hang on, just a minute, there's got to be a recognition of something greater than the interests of the U.S. military and people who want to establish themselves as second-term presidents or senators or congresspeople. And the reason I'm going in that direction, Ernest, is because I think that's why I'm here in Las Vegas right now. How do I ever get a foot in the door of a U.S. court of law in order to start to raise these issues? Now, I think I should be raising the issues with my friends. I skipped out on our vigils this afternoon so I could do this conversation with you, and I'm glad to do that. But vigiling is important, and demonstrating is important, but also trying to go into a U.S. court of law. Now, on what basis? How are we going to manage to
You've got to get a government number. It is an arrest number. It's an initiative. It's a campaign. It's a whatever. But you get a government number. And once you get that government number and you go in the court, then you have a court of record. Now, regardless of whether they rule in your favor or not, you know, at least you got a record. You get power of deposition if they'll let you. But then they always claim, you know, national security and so on. So I understand what you're doing. I think you should do it. And I want you to go ahead and continue on that thought. But we're run up against a break here. So when we come back, I'm going to go ahead and let you talk about what you're doing there, and you get a full segment. But as we go into the break, I want to think about one thing here because we only got a few seconds. We have not only the military, we have the CIA now has their own drones. And what do we find out in just during the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton screaming for the State Department to have their own military force? Well, will that include drones? I guarantee it. So I am just, you know, this is bad. You know, Hillary Clinton wants her own military. I feel all warm and fuzzy about that one. So this is, I can see where this is going, and it's going to continue to get worse. And somebody has to do something, and we can talk about it here, but like Kathy Kelly says, We got to get in the court. We got to get our government number. We got to be able to, you know, rise up against the man. We got to demonstrate, show, lead the way, do something. How do you do that? Do you go over and start shooting down drones in your little private Learjet or something over in Afghanistan? Or do you go where they're controlling them here? Do you go to the bases? Do you walk in? Do you get to say, go ahead, arrest me, arrest me. Let's get it on. Let's get it on. Which is what they are doing. And we're talking about it here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, my special guest, Kathy Kelly. Go check out the webpage, vcnv.org. Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Well, when we come back, I'm going to give her a whole segment. She tells all about her creative nonviolence on Air Force bases, trying to get this before the public and in the courts. I applaud that, and I'm going to let her detail it to you when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
One way to declare your independence is to, I don't know, challenge the man. Well, I tell you, the man be a challenge by Kathy Kelly. We have her from vcnv.org, which is the website of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. Now, she's being creative in her nonviolence, trying to get in the court and get her a government number. But, you know, it's also, they just say, you know, you're an enemy combatant. You sound like an enemy of the state to me, Kathy. They're just going to ship your butt off to Guantanamo and give you an orange jumpsuit and put a hood on you. So, I mean, are you prepared for that? Kathy, I got you there. I'm sorry. Yeah, network. I just needed to push the button. I apologize. I'm sorry. Are you prepared for the orange jumpsuit and headgear?
Hi, can you hear me?
There I can.
You can hear me now?
There we go. I apologize.
Thank you. Okay. Well, Ernest, I did spend some time. I spent 1 year in maximum security prison and another 3 months in a minimum security prison, and I've been held overnight in prisons many times, really. And I don't like prisons. I don't think that it's a good idea to set up situations where human beings act like zookeepers for other human beings. It's something I have some strong feelings about. But I've never experienced anything even close to the misery that Guantanamo detainees and people imprisoned in Bagram and in dark sites have experienced. The torture, the assurance that you have no way to speak up for yourself, that you don't really enjoy human rights. These are abuses that I don't have any familiarity with. But I do know that I can speak up much more than any prisoner at Guantanamo can, and that I have a responsibility, a duty, really. And really, that's part of what it means to live in a country with a constitution that says Congress shall make no law to abridge the right of people to assemble peaceably for redress of grievance. Now, I think that
free speech zone. They said, you know what, you're not allowed to be free speech here. You got to go over there. You know, how's that working out for you?
Well, here's what I think. The United States Air Force has usurped its authority over the land where the targeted assassinations are being enacted. These targeted assassinations are wrongful. They are a war crime. They're a crime against peace. They're a crime against humanity, because human beings who've committed no crime against us are being targeted and killed on a regular basis. And so as long as the U.S. Air Force is using the land at Creech Air Force Base to enable this, to practice for it, to then train their sights on civilians and others who've had no due process, no chance to appear in a court of law.
And not and even a declared war. So I understand
that. I don't have authority over it, sir.
Well, I understand your motivation for this. I'm wanting to know how it is that you think you're going to be able to get into court on this. What is the standing? Is it going to be a trespass charge? I mean, what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, this is a state charge. First, they dropped the charges against us completely, and then they reinstated charges under state of Nevada statute saying that we had trespassed. And then last night, the prosecutor called one of our defendants, reached his spouse, because the defendant was, in fact, here, and said, I'm going to ask for a continuance. And so we've discussed this amongst ourselves, and we are representing ourselves in court, but we do have advice from the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, Bill Quigley, of whom we're calling on as an expert witness. We're also calling on former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark and Colonel Ann Wright, a former diplomat who, in fact, opened up the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan. So we have three of the best and most qualified expert witnesses on the planet, honestly, in terms of people who can speak English and, you know...
How it is that you got... We kind of skipped over that part. I don't... You know, I did not know that we already had a case before the courts. How did that come about?
Well, that came about because we entered onto Creech Air Force Base April 9th, 2009, and we carried with us a letter that we wanted to circulate amongst people at the base, talking to them, discussing with them all of our responsibilities to stop targeted assassinations and mass extrajudicial killings, and our concern for them, for their safety, for the safety of their families, and certainly for the safety of people in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and some of us had just returned from there. So we were arrested, and we were held overnight in jail, and then after the overnight in jail, we went back to our respective homes, and then we got notice that the charges were dropped, and then we got notice that charges were reinstated. So that's how it is that we started to plan our case, and we've been working on this for really 10 months. We've contacted the expert witnesses. We've had fundraisers to raise money to fly them here. We've made arrangements for ourselves to come as far away from as Binghamton, New York, and Chicago, Illinois, from places all around the country. We've gotten a couple of other lawyers to agree to be with us as advisors. And we've worked very hard to establish a draft memorandum that's 21 pages long that lists all of the legal reasons why we should be able to provide testimony and evidence that indicates that we were bound by U.S. law to take the action that we took, that it wasn't criminal at all. Now, the prosecutor said he wanted a continuance. He said, there is no way that I can deal with all of this legal evidence that you want to present. I only just was brought in on this because the inexperienced prosecutor took a look at it all and said she can't or he can't deal with it, so they brought me in on it. And now I need 2 months' time to examine this, and I'm asking for a continuance. And we felt that that wasn't fair. They had 10 months. It wasn't our fault if they had an inexperienced prosecutor assigned to the case. And so I think maybe the judge or somebody in the Nevada court system said to the prosecutor, sorry, but you're going to have to go ahead with this case. We're not going to grant a continuance or seek a continuance.
Yeah, speedy trial. But I tell you, you know, whenever it's in to the advantage of the government, they get it, and when it's advantage of the defense, it's denied. So, I mean, that's been my experience.
We don't want
in the
a continuance, Ernest. We want to go ahead. We're ready.
No, I'm sure. So 10 months, man. We've been waiting on you now.
Probably on Tuesday, when we go into court, the prosecution will ask for a motion ad limine, which means they can eliminate any evidence that we might try to call forth that has to do with expert witness testimony or our motivation. And that's most often how the U.S. courts deal with the kinds of cases that peace activists bring forth. However, on January 14th in Washington, D.C., I was a defendant in a case where the judge did allow Bill Quigley, the Center for Constitutional Rights legal director, to lay out the whole nine yards of argumentation of precedence as to why U.S. citizens have an obligation and a duty to inform themselves about international law, about the Nuremberg precedents, about the way that this becomes the law of the land when the United States signs a treaty, and about our constitutional guarantee that Congress shall make no law to abridge the right of people to assemble peaceably for redress of grievance. The judge allowed all of it, and he acquitted us. It was a bench trial, and the judge acquitted us. Now, that's very unusual. But the more that we can establish this kind of precedent, the more I think people will be inclined to say, hey, I'm going to take my turn doing this as well. It's a tremendous inconvenience in many ways. You know, you have to come up with airfares to travel great distances.
Oh, no, I understand. I encourage you guys doing it, and I appreciate the effort. But I'm trying to think of it. Another way, I can't think of any other way that you would be able to address the remote-controlled piloting of a drone shooting a Hellfire missile halfway around the world, and you want to counter that in some way. I mean, what else would you do? I mean, I'm sure you were thinking of what can we do, and were there other ideas that popped into your head, or is this the only thing you could come up with? I can't think of anything else.
Well, we went to Pakistan, and we tried to interview the survivors of drone attacks on two separate occasions, and then we wrote about that, and we spoke about it in places all over the United States. And we've also got a new trip to Pakistan scheduled. Three of us will leave the United States on October 11th, and we'll do our best to travel as close to the war zones as we can and, prepare ourselves for what is in some ways very risky travel, and we also went into
Afghanistan. Yes, I'm sure it is. When we come back here on Declare Your Independence, Kathy Kelly will give us some more insight on the impact this has on the people on the receiving end of a Hellfire missile. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with
something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's take a break. Stop. Take a look, see what's going on. Kathy Kelly is helping me with that. You know, I was so focused on I finally got someone that we could talk to about the actual impact on the people that are on the receiving end of these Hellfire missiles with these drones, these Predators and Reapers, that and I definitely wanted to bring up the fact that not only does the military have this, the CIA does. They're just assassinating people from the air. This is amazing on video screens. It's like a bad B sci-fi movie. Then we have the State Department screaming for their own military, and you know they're going to get their drones. This is dangerous. What I failed to realize as I was doing the research on that and so on, as I, I'm looking here, my producer had it, and it's my fault, is that we already have a case that they're working on right now after week of demonstrations and vigils in April of 2009. We have next Tuesday, there is a trial after 10 months. Now, of course, they don't want to play anymore. Certainly, they didn't figure out the timing. We're going right into an election year, okay? So they're going, we need a continuance until, mid-November, until after the election or something. Because what's happening right now is a trial set to where, it's trespassing charges, but then, why? I mean, you always want motivation. Why? Why were you here? Why? Well, some of the witnesses include former Attorney General Ramsey Clark, former Deputy Chief of Mission at the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan, Colonel Ann Wright, and Legal Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, William Quigley. When you start bringing in people, you go, hey, question, thank you for asking, let me tell you why. And you start getting on the record as to why this action was taken, because that was one of the things that the founders really wanted to make sure was clear, is that, man, you can't restrict the free expression and peaceful assembly of the people, because that's the first thing a tyrannical government wants to do, is to shut you up. You're not allowed to complain. So, Kathy, tell me, do you really think that they're going to go ahead and go to trial? And let me go ahead and give you your website again. It's vcnv.org, vcnv.org. So what's it look like now? They're going to go ahead and have a trial Tuesday or not?
Well, certainly they are going to go forward with the trial. They've guaranteed us now that they're not going to seek a continuance. I think
guaranteed you? What does that mean? You got to explain that guarantee. I don't know how many times I've heard that from government.
Well, this just means that those of us who have assembled and come to Las Vegas to go into the courtroom and have our court case begin know that the prosecutor is not going to seek a continuance. I think this now means that the prosecutor will seek a motion that eliminates the possibility of our introducing any expert witnesses. And if the judge grants this, then we will proceed and we'll be able at least to question one another about what we did and why. And that much, I think, the judge will allow. So the court will hear that. But meanwhile, we'll be on Monday night before the trial hosting through the auspices of the University of Nevada Las Vegas Law School, Colonel Ann Wright, and Bill Quigley, who is one of the most sought-after lawyers in numerous cases and has won some of the most coveted awards, not through competition, but just the recognition that here is one fine human being and a skillful lawyer, and then former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark. And I think these law students are going to be very, very interested in what such skillful people, such expert witnesses have to say. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to have this case generate further education. We've also had numerous radio interviews and some coverage on some of the alternative websites, antiwar.com, commondreams, truthout.org. And we'll have a chance to write our own depiction of what we think the court case should have looked like. We'll have a chance to say to the Shoshone Indians and the Paiute Indians, we're sorry that the institution that's going to hear this case represents a country that took your land. We'll have an opportunity to really give credence to the words of some of our fellow descendants who've just emerged from lengthy prison sentences, like the Reverend Louis Vitali, a Franciscan priest who just served 6 months in prison. We'll have an opportunity to hear about people like Safdar Dawar, a journalist in Pakistan who told me when I was in Pakistan, you know, we have questions for you. And I said, oh, okay. And he asked me, do people in your country know much about the drones? And I said, well, yeah, some do. And then he said, but what about the mainstream? Do they know about the production of drones and about the way these drones are being used to kill civilians in our country? Do average ordinary people in your country know? And I said, well, no, they don't. And then he said, where is your democracy? And then I was really just kind of flailing, and he said, look, it's for you that we want you to understand the hatred is rising. It's a real problem here. The hatred is rising.
Oh, and we keep giving them reasons. I'm wondering, are you going to be videotaping, YouTubing, making this available to be linked to?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that. The University of Nevada Law School asked if they could tape everything, and we said that would be fine, and we also have a videographer coming to join us, and her videography will be up. I know that Grit TV is planning to take it. We're hoping that some other stations will take it. Maybe some of your listeners could help us out by, you know, calling your local station and saying, hey, we would really like to know what happens. Why don't you cover this? And we've been putting out press releases through all of the mainstream press and have been calling and making, you know, the most of the opportunity to accomplish outreach and education about this crucial issue. So it's now, I think, ordinary people have got to ask themselves, what can we do? And not only can people try to urge their community leaders and media to pay attention to this very, very important and crucial case, they can write letters to the editor, they can call their elected representatives, and also, you know, why not do a mock drone attack in front of your own college dormitory or federal building or community gathering spot? Just, you know, find a noise that's similar to the noises that machines make that pick up leaves on the ground. Tape that, and then play that noise, and then have a kind of a freeze frame where some people fall to the ground and are lying on the ground and others are frozen. And quick passed out cards, we've got those available. And the cards would just simply make a you are statement. You are 6 years old and you were collecting scrap metal on a mountainside and suddenly you were carbonized by a U.S. drone-fired weapon.
And, you know, one thing I did want you to address the issue of, one, it's not a declared war, and two, we're assassinating people, and three, they say they can assassinate even if you're a U.S. citizen, four, they're not giving any due process. It's going to be expanded to our intelligence community, and even the State Department wants to have this capacity. I mean, this is, I'm wondering, what is the issue that you're focusing on as why you're against these type of drone attacks on someone? Can you give me, you know, my main objection is just killing people, or is there they're not declaring war, or U.S. shouldn't be doing over there anyway? I mean, what is your primary focus?
Oh, I object to killing people. I object to United States people being called upon to fund killing and destruction and institutionalized assassination without discussion. And so we want that discussion to happen. And right now, these drones are kind of like the Lady Gaga of the Air Force. The Air Force is very excited. All kinds of aerospace institutes are finding new and different kinds of drones to develop, mini drones that can fly down your hallways and through your windows, and the Voyeur drone, which it can be equipped. It's like a helicopter, but without the copter. It's a rotor that's equipped with tear gas canisters and surveillance and possibly weaponry. Do we want to move in this direction? Well, we have to have that question posed to us in serious ways. And find then ways to act that are commensurate to the crimes being committed in our names. And that means that we, all of us, have to take this issue seriously, study it, go online. You can learn plenty about it by going online, or call any one of us involved in this case. You can get in touch with Voices for Creative Nonviolence easily, or with the Nevada Desert Experience, or with the Center for Constitutional Rights. You can be in touch with Ramsey Clark and Ann Wright and Bill Quigley. There's really plenty of reason to focus on this. And if people think, well, I've got other things to do, you know, I've got to take my kids to the soccer game, or I've got to be involved in making sure the kids go to Little League and that they go to the piano lessons and that they get enrolled in, you know, the proper extracurricular activities. But it's for the children. All of this is for the children. So we might have to rearrange our priorities a bit.
And well, let me go ahead and ask before I let you go. I just want to know, this is not a, you know, Democrats going to save us thing. You know, this is, you go high enough on the left side or the right side of the pyramid, you get up to the point you find the same people are in control of both sides. So, I mean, is there an opposition to government in general, or are you willing to take on the Obama administration? Is there, I mean, what's your political solution? We're asking people to what? Are you still voting? I mean, you know, why should we? What's the difference? You know, give me a 10-seconder on that.
No, I don't let Holy Mother the State usurp my responsibilities to act as a citizen, a responsible citizen in this world. No matter which administration is occupying Washington or London or the elite, I think we all, as ordinary people, have rights and responsibilities.
Yes, we do. Kathy Kelly, thank you for taking the responsibility that many of us don't. We appreciate it.